They were halfway up the steps when they heard the voices. Sam slowed, fearful that it was his mother again, or something pretending to be his mother, something that wanted to mock him from the darkness. But as they regained their position on the top step, the noise began to transform, splitting from one sound into several discernible sounds, each with a different rhythm, the uneven tempo of words. It reminded Sam of standing in a hushed crowd, a ripple of disobedient whispers rising and falling around him. "What is that?" he asked. Moore shook her head. "Hell if I know." Sam lowered his ear to the hole. The suction was intense, pulling his head toward the wall. He fought it, listening as the voices collapsed upon each other like waves. He could not make out what they were saying, but their pace was urgent, as if what they had to share could wait no longer.
"I've heard this before."
It was Sebastian, once more at the base of the stairs. Neither of them had heard him approaching. "Sebastian?" Sam asked, confused. "Where were you?" The old man ignored the question.
"I heard it in my room, the last time we were here. I heard it in my sink, down the drain."
In any other circumstance, Sam was sure Moore would have scoffed at this, but not here. They both nodded as if Sebastian's admission were the most natural thing in the world. Without warning, the voices changed position, the whispering behind the wall cutting out like a radio being clicked off. They picked up a beat later, down in the second floor hall, muffled slightly by the closed doors. Sam cocked his head toward the new location.
"Now it's coming from the bedrooms."
The noises leapt from room to room, first confined to the bedroom at the end of the hall, then relocating instantly to the door nearest the main staircase. The voices alternated at random, hitting each other like the off-key bars of a broken xylophone. Soon the spaces between the shifts began to grow briefer, the noises coalescing into one voice, the words spoken in unison. A chant, still too low to make out, yet spoken with that same unnerving urgency. They whirled around Sam, Moore, and Sebastian like an aural cyclone. Sebastian tugged on the sleeve of Sam's shirt.
"We need the others. They should be here."
"He's right. Best to band together, to enter the third floor as a group."
Moore was already on her feet and squeezing past Sebastian in the narrow stairwell. "I'll find them. You two get the rest of that wall down." Sam retrieved the smaller hammer. Crouching down so that he was level with the hole, he peered into the darkness, trying to make out anything, a single detail, a hint of what may await them once the wall was down. The dim light outside tried to slip between the cracks of boards covering what Sam assumed was the front third-story window. That all-seeing eye perched atop the house. From what he could tell, the room was bare except for a single piece of furniture. Some sort of chair. Two circular posts flanked it. Wheels. Rebecca Finch's wheelchair. Other than that, the room was empty. 33. 4:08 p.m. The chorus of whispers rolled across the first floor like fog, billowing up in the corners of the foyer before folding back in the opposite direction. Moore could hear them more clearly down there, away from the others, the words seemingly directed toward her. They were voices, she was sure of it. Hundreds of them, male and female, old and young. At one point she even thought she heard the terrified wail of a baby. Wainwright and Daniel were nowhere to be found. She moved from room to room, calling out their names. There was no response. In the kitchen, she found the back door locked tight. She parted the heavy velvet curtain that hung over a nearby window, peering out through the pouring rain at the woods behind the house. There was no sign of movement, only the heavy branches swaying as the fat raindrops pelted them. The storm had given the world outside a sickly greenish-yellow hue, the flora deepened by several shades, leaves cloaked in shadow.
It was not the kind of thing one saw in Los Angeles, where a single crack of thunder was enough to send motorists skidding off the road. No, this was a warning of worse things to come. The rain would not let up. The wind would grow more intense. Hail would pelt the roof's weathered shingles. The purr of a woman's voice snaked around Moore's feet, murmuring something unintelligible. Glancing down, she instantly zeroed in on the source. An electrical outlet just off to her left. The sound emanated from the outlet's tiny slits, the soft buzz of electricity carried beneath it. Her jaw and her fists clenched simultaneously. The damned voices made her mad. The house was taunting her, thumbing its nose at her, daring her to fight back. Fight back against what? She wondered. She kicked the outlet hard, hoping the voice would falter, retreat farther back into the wall. It did not. The words poured out, whispered so quickly that they became one long series of jumbled consonants and vowels. With some concentration, she was able to pick out a recognizable word here and there. That, the woman said, and house, and bad. After a few minutes, Moore began to recognize the same words again and again, consistently repeated in the precise order. At one time, an entire sentence became clear. You kids stay away. She waited another full minute, watching the second hand on her watch as it spun past the quarter mark. There it was again, right on time. Whoever this woman was, a past inhabitant, a frightened neighbor, her warning appeared to be on a loop, repeated over and over by the house, infinitely. But there was an end, abrupt and unexpected. The woman cut off mid-sentence as two new voices, those of young boys, took over. "Dare you to knock on the door," the first one said. "I'm not scared," replied the second. It played like an audio snapshot, a moment in time captured by the house. It had overheard this, a dare between two friends. Overheard. Seriously? How the hell can a house hear? Dare you to knock on the door. I'm not scared. Then suddenly the whispering from the outlet ceased, and Moore became aware of a new voice calling out from another room. She turned toward it, attempting to discern its location. Moving across the kitchen, her footsteps soft and silent, she followed the sound to the basement door. Resting one hand on the knob, she pressed her ear up against the door, surprised to find that her pulse had quickened. That fear was bubbling just beneath her anger.
Help!
It was a young man's voice. He was clearly in distress.
Anybody up there? Please, I need help.
Wainwright, Moore realized. Throwing open the door, she rushed down the rickety stairs into the absolute blackness of the basement. She recalled the last time she had done this, hesitantly creeping down with a camera and flashlight to illuminate her path. Now she raced into the void. She yelled his name out loud.
Wainwright, where are you? I'm coming.
The ambient light from the kitchen did little to illuminate her descent, but it was just enough to reveal the arch of a person's back, rising from the darkness at the foot of the stairs like the hump of a white whale. Her first thought was that Wainwright was injured. Perhaps he had slipped on a step and tumbled to the basement floor. But something wasn't right. The body before her was too pale, too cold, a lifeless color, like flesh completely drained of blood. She slowed her pace. Wainwright? With an unsteady hand, she reached for the crumpled form resting oddly on the cool cement. It seemed to anticipate her touch. It shifted, pushing itself away from her. At the same time, its face twisted toward her into the light. Above her, the door began to swing closed, the light on the stairs quickly reduced to a mere sliver. Moore recoiled, whipping her hand away from the thing at the foot of the stairs. The face staring back at her was not Wainwright. It was barely recognizable as human. It grinned with cracked, dirt-crusted lips pressed tightly against rotting black teeth. Its flesh was gaunt, cheekbones poking sharply beneath skin bruised purple by pools of trapped, coagulated blood. A few thin strands of ratty black hair hung over its eyes. The rest had fallen out long ago, its scalp dotted with red, fleshy craters like the volcanic surface of some distant moon. A low, raspy chuckle seethed through its clenched teeth, its body quivering as it laughed at her.
Teresa,
it hissed. Moore's stomach clenched into a fist. She thought she was going to vomit.
Oh, God!
The faint outline of a tattoo covered the rotten flesh of the thing's back. She knew it well. It was the snarling face of a tiger. Bobby had been so proud of that piece of shit back piece. Just another pathetic attempt to feel like a man.
I've made a mistake, Moore thought.
And then the door slammed shut, the light extinguished, the darkness engulfing her. She could hear that thing, that abomination, pulling itself up the stairs toward her, its splintered fingernails digging into the wood. Its voice bubbled up through the wall of mucus in its throat.
Why do you make me hurt you?
Instinctively, Moore began to retreat, taking a step back, then another, and another. The door. She could make it, but she had to run.
Now, run!
She was turning to make her escape when something darted out from between the steps and slammed into her left ankle, biting deeply into her flesh. She heard the crack of breaking bone, but it was too late to stop her forward motion. The weight of her body came down on her left foot, and there was a sickening snap as her ankle split clean in two. She roared with pain, hands grasping blindly in the darkness as she lost balance, teetering backward, her broken ankle folding at an unnatural angle. She was falling, back down the stairs, back toward the dead, rotten thing waiting on the basement floor. She could hear that awful, gleeful chuckle rising, and with it the wet crackle of phlegm-filled lungs. Her right shoulder hit the ground first, ramming into the merciless concrete, the ball of her humerus popping clean out of its socket. Muscle tore as her body came down on her dislocated arm. The pain was excruciating, momentarily distracting her from the white-hot throb of her ankle. She gave a frightened whimper, disgusted by the weakness she heard in it, but unable to stop herself. T.C. Moore had often written of absolute terror. Her characters often found themselves being tortured by godlike beings from other worlds, their flesh peeled back with pliers, their fingernails snapped off, their orifices defiled in unspeakable ways. She had relished in the suffering of her hapless heroes, convincing herself that there was a crossroads where pain met pleasure. She insisted that this was what it meant to be truly alive, the sensation of agony transformed into ecstasy. What Moore's fans did not know was that she had never experienced such a moment of transcendence. She had suffered horrible beatings at the fists of her ex-boyfriend, one bad enough to split the pupil in her eye. But it had never broken through into pleasure. Pain was pain. There was nothing wonderful about it. The anguish she was encountering on the basement floor was beyond anything she had ever imagined. It was mentally blinding, her mind filled with an intense white flash, even as the blackness of her surroundings smothered her. Her arm flopped uselessly at her side, her foot bent against the broken bones so that it jutted away from her body at a 90-degree angle. Her entire body seemed to throb, the pulse of her speeding heart captured in her swollen arm and leg like a hive of angry bees ramming her flesh to escape. She could feel a wetness on her ankle, the open wound where something had sliced into her. With her left hand, Moore pushed herself up, propping her back against the wall. The dead thing was nearby. Its giddy laugh had ceased, but she could still hear it breathing. She swiped at the open space around her, wanting to make contact and not make contact at the same time. Touching it would be awful.
perhaps too awful for her frazzled mind to handle, but not knowing its location was somehow worse. She could picture it. Rotten flesh stained by the damp earth, those terrible teeth exposed in a lipless grin, cloudy eyes staring hungrily through the abyss. She swung her arm around to her side, and her hand collided with something almost rubbery in texture. With her fingers, she traced the object, attempting to determine its dimensions. Her fingertips slid across something slick. The dampness of breath heated her palm. The thing leaned closer, and Moore realized what was happening. She was touching a face. Her fingers were on its teeth, and it was smiling. She could almost see it through the darkness, a pale orb hovering inches away from her.
I found you, Teresa.
It chuckled as sickening black bile poured down over its lapping tongue. With her dislocated arm and broken ankle screaming in protest, Moore scrambled madly away. The edge of the first step smacked into the base of her back, and she pushed herself up onto it, trying to scoot up the stairs like a child who has yet to learn to walk. The thing did not follow. It shrank back into the shadows. Moore sat on the step, her chest heaving as she drew in fast, frightened breaths. As if from another world, a sound filtered down to her. The muffled clank of a hammer on brick. Rearing her head back, she yelled up the stairs.
Sam!
She tried again, drawing out the word until her voice cracked.
Sam!
He can't help you, someone spoke in the darkness. Moore turned toward the voice, trying to force her eyes to see in the pitch-black room.
Who is that? Who's there?
Feet shuffled, the grit of the concrete floor scraping beneath shoes. It doesn't have to be bad. I can make it quick. I promise.
Daniel?
Moore's mind tried to make sense of it, but she found that she couldn't. It was beyond sense. What doesn't have to be so bad? Make what quick? I have to, Daniel said. You understand, don't you? You know that I have to do it.
Do what, Daniel?
There was that scrape again. He was moving closer. I have to. I'm sorry.
Daniel, I'm hurt. I need your help. Help me up the stairs.
You saw her, didn't you? From the sound of his voice, he was now only a few feet away. Moore winced as she pushed herself up another step, trying to put distance between them.
Saw who? Daniel, what are you talking about?
She managed another step, groaning as her mangled foot knocked against the post of the handrail.
I saw you touch her face, Daniel said.
Her? Another step, her arm trembling weakly under her weight.
Who do you think that was?
There was a long, silent pause. Moore had the ridiculous notion that Daniel had exited the room, her mind temporarily forgetting that the staircase on which she was sprawled served as the only way out. Leaning on her elbow for support, Moore craned her neck to look up the stairs. She was halfway to the door. She could just make out the sliver of light beneath it. She grasped the back edge of another step. Her muscles bulged beneath the sleeve of her shirt as she pulled her aching body farther up the staircase. She was close. So close. The light beneath the door was brighter now. Almost within reach. The bottom step squeaked loudly, and Moore knew that Daniel was coming after her.
It was Claire.
The voice seemed to hover over Moore in the darkness like a spider dangling from its web. It was my Claire. All of the traps Moore had ever set in her mind, those glorious mental contraptions designed to position others right where she wanted them, they were nothing compared to the trap this house had set for her. The hatchet struck Moore in the stomach, a powerful blow that drove her back against the stairs. There was a cracking noise. The world began to tremble.
Something snapped beneath her. She was falling through the shattered stairs. She landed back on the hard floor of the basement. Daniel was coming back down the stairs, down to finish what he had started. Blood seeped between her fingers as Moore clutched her stomach. There was nowhere to hide. Then, from within those impenetrable shadows, came a voice. Not the gravelly voice of the thing pretending to be Bobby. It was a woman, prim and proper, an iciness to her words. "You come into our house? You have to play by our rules," the voice said. Moore peered into the darkness, trying desperately to make out the person speaking. "But our game is fair. Oh, yes, you have a choice." The voice sounded like it was right in front of Moore, but all she saw was darkness. "You can stay where you are, and he will find you. Or you can come to me, and I will take all of your pain away." That first step squeaked again as Daniel reached the bottom of the stairs. The voice said, "Do you want that? Do you want me to take away the pain?"
"I do,"
Moore admitted to herself. She wanted the pain to end. She had lived with it for almost her entire life, and all she had ever wanted, more than fame and money and sex and power, all she wanted was for the pain to end. "Come to me." Daniel was a large, heaving shadow at the foot of the stairs. The hatchet was gripped in his hand. Blood fell in thick drops from its blade.
"My blood," Moore thought. "That's my blood."
"Come to me, and you'll never feel the pain again." There was an eye in the darkness, a single pale orb floating like a frozen, distant planet. A woman's eye, cold and powerful. "Come." Daniel's head snapped to the right, and he glared at Moore through the shadows. Without a word, he stormed toward her, raising the hatchet into the air.
"Pain is pain," Moore thought.
She scrambled quickly toward the darkness and into the arms of the thing waiting there. 34. 4:35 p.m. The raindrops hit the dry, thirsty earth, but it refused them, their liquid bodies, like tears from the sky, rolling aimlessly across the brittle surface of the creek bed. It was not long before the individual droplets found each other and merged, first creating snake-like rivulets of rain that coursed from bank to bank, then joining into a single sheet of water, its level rising with every inch that fell. The furry green vines that draped the countryside like exposed muscle began to awaken at the soothing touch of the cool rain. Their movement was subtle, the constrictions slow like the stirrings of an animal roused from hibernation. As the creek bed filled with rainwater, the vines wriggled beneath the surface, leafy worms digging in the dirt. Still the ground did not drink. Kill Creek, with the exception of a few stagnant puddles, began to flow once more. There was a moment of all-consuming strangeness, and then there was a click, and Sebastian's mind was clear again. It reminded him of the television he had bought with the paycheck from his first published novel, a heavy wooden monster with a protruding black-and-white eye, antennae sprouting haphazardly from its head. Back in those days, there were only a handful of channels to receive, which meant that you had to wade through several patches of static as you turned the dial in search of a healthy signal. For 6 months, Sebastian had been free of these spells. He felt reborn, relishing every moment of this new age of lucidity. But now things had changed. He was tempted to leave the group and return home. Panic had invaded him, and it was growing stronger the longer he stayed in the house. He did not want to lose his mind. He did not want to be plunged forever into the nothingness.
"The house giveth, and the house taketh away."
It wasn't quite the same sensation as before, though. Instead, it was as if the dial had become stuck between channels. Two separate images dogpiling each other. 1 minute he was on the stairs, watching Sam pound away at that profoundly stubborn brick wall. And then the sides of the house began to ripple.
The digestion of memories,
he thought, not sure exactly what it meant. He could still see the house as it was, the hallway stretching out before him, empty and barren, ending in the top of the far staircase that led down to the first floor. But superimposed upon this was a duplicate image, similar but not exact. A glimpse out of time. Sometimes this was all that occurred before the dial would finish its turn to the next channel, the present returning to him, clear and genuine. Other times, transparent forms would pass before him. People he did not know, their clothing reminiscent of times only vaguely familiar. A woman and a man, black and white, like that old television he had owned so long ago. From the top step, Sebastian could hear the clank of Sam's hammer chipping at the brick. The sound reverberated through him, from the center of his chest out, like a stone tossed into a mirror-still pond. But every time he became accustomed to these ghostly images, click, the hallway would once again be empty, the washed-out colors regaining their full vibrancy, the apparitions gone in the blink of an eye, and all memory of the occurrence gone with it. Once more, they were alone. When Sam was in the third grade, he and his father decided to plant a row of rose bushes as a surprise for his mother. She was gone for the day, visiting her father at a rest home called Holiday Resort. The holiday consisting of Grandpa King sucking on an oxygen tank and battling a mean case of emphysema, the result of many happy years of smoking. Sam's mom wouldn't be back until late evening, and his father was confident that they could get the plants in the ground in time. Even at 3 months shy of 9 years old, Sam knew his mother would not truly appreciate the gesture. She would force a smile and say how beautiful they looked, and then she would go into the house to pour herself a vodka and tonic with a twist of lime. What she truly thought of Sam and his father's hard work would come out later. "You think a few puny roses can make up for this rat hole of a house?" But there in the warm afternoon sunshine, both Sam and his dad, a thin, meek fellow with a weak chin and even weaker backbone, convinced themselves this gift would actually make her happy. The rose bushes were lined up in a row along the backside of the house, 8 in all, their thorny branches waiting patiently to prick soft flesh. The thorns reminded Sam of a shark's teeth, jutting off in all directions, like the rotating blades of a garbage disposal, made to tear, to shred, to destroy. His father returned from the garage with 2 shovels, handing the shorter one to Sam. The plan was to plant the bushes in the long stretch of soil between the back patio and the house. His father insisted that once they got into the groove, the job should only take them a couple hours, 3 at the most. Then, while digging the first hole, they hit something hard. Cement. The edge of the shovel scraped angrily against the buried slab. "No problem," his father insisted. "Just move a little to the right and dig again." Sam did as he was told, but his new hole was only a few inches deep before his shovel let out another painful screech. Concrete, same as the last. After the fourth hole led to the same results, Sam's father began to realize the frustrating situation they were facing. The house's foundation had been sloppily poured, and the excess concrete had been allowed to run off and dry, leaving a layer hard as stone surrounding their home. Not one to easily lose his cool, Sam's father disappeared back into the garage and returned, moments later, with a pickaxe in one hand and a sledgehammer in the other. First he used the pickaxe, its pointed edge chipping at the cement like the horn of some strange metal beast. Shards of concrete flew, pecking at their faces, but the slab refused to split. The sledgehammer also had little effect, denting the rock-hard surface but otherwise leaving it intact. After an hour, Sam's father was covered in a mixture of sweat and powdered stone and filled with something close to rage. He threw the sledgehammer to the ground, muttered a few choice curse words under his breath, then surveyed the yard and pointed out a patch of soil along the picket fence at the far end. The rose bushes were set easily into this new location. Sam's mother came home to a pleasant surprise and a forced smile, and for a few fleeting moments, all was right with the world. But with Sam and his dad, there lingered a sense of defeat. The knowledge that they had gone to battle with the concrete slab and lost. That same sensation now came to Sam, rising from the back of his throat like the bitter taste of bile. He had managed to free four more bricks from the wall, but the others were holding tight with otherworldly conviction. With the absence of five bricks, the hole was almost large enough for Sam to poke his head and shoulder through. He could have reached a hand in had he wished, but the fear of something grabbing hold kept him from doing so. Instead, he peered into the gloomy third-floor bedroom, searching for anything. A clue. A tiny detail that would make all of the other unbelievable occurrences fall into place, making sense of this inexplicable adventure they were on. Except for that ancient, abandoned wheelchair, the room was empty. The whispering voices emanating from the house had stopped a few minutes before, leaving Sam and Sebastian in a stillness that was, for some reason, even more disconcerting. Sebastian was at the foot of the steps, facing the small window that looked out into the backyard. The rain pelted the window pane, tapping it like a child asking to come in.
"Quiet," he said.
"I know," Sam said. Whatever the house was saying, it stopped. Sebastian shook his head.
"That's not it. I mean, it's quiet. No sounds at all. Not even from the others."
Sam cocked an ear, listening. There was only the rain. On the window, on the roof, accompanied by the occasional rumble of thunder. Otherwise, the house was completely silent. No footsteps. No muffled voices. No doors clicking shut. "You're right. It's like they're gone." With the hammer still clutched in his hand, Sam moved down the narrow staircase and peeked around the corner. He called out each of their names.
"Wainwright! Daniel! Moore!"
Each one bounced its way down the hall, retreating into the depths of the house, until even the echo was consumed. There was no answer.
"Maybe they stepped out for a smoke," Sam offered.
Sebastian shook his head but continued staring out at the back lot. The reflection of raindrops cast shadows rippling down his cheeks.
"They're not exactly old chums. They would rather be here helping you than palling around on the front porch."
He took in a deep breath and glanced at his wristwatch.
"Besides, they've been gone for far too long."
He was right. It had been half an hour since Moore left to look for the others, and over 2 hours since they had last seen Daniel. Could it have been that long? The afternoon had escaped them, the task of breaking through the brick wall consuming their day.
"What do you say I go have a look?"
Sebastian suggested.
"No," Sam said, a bit shocked by the sternness in his own voice.
"That was our mistake," he thought. "The house split us up without us even realizing it." Sebastian started down the hall. Sam opened his mouth to call out, but the sound of heavy footsteps stopped him. Sebastian came to a halt just past the first set of bedroom doors.
"There they are now," Sebastian said.
A hulking black form appeared at the top of the stairs. The dark, faintly human figure stood motionless for a beat, like the shadow of a mountain, shoulders heaving with each deep breath. And then he moved slowly into the light. Upon seeing Daniel, Sam's first thought was that he'd cut himself. But there was too much blood. Splattered beads of it dotted his face, already drying to a brownish red. His polo was soaked through, its wetness shimmering in what little light there was. His hair was slicked back,
with what Sam first assumed must be water or sweat, but now realized was thick globs of blood. This was not the Daniel they had come to know. The man who had tugged self-consciously at the edge of his shirt in an attempt to pull it over his bulging belly. This Daniel seemed to have no idea that he was caked in gore, that his arms were streaked with it, that it dripped from his fingers like scarlet tears. Sam's eyes followed the jagged lines of red down his arms to his right hand and the carpenter's hatchet clutched there. On one end was the flat head of a hammer, the other narrowed into a hatchet. Its blade was shiny slick with a thick coat of crimson and dotted with pale flecks that Sam assumed must be flesh. Sebastian took a step toward Daniel and held out his hands. He made a sweeping motion from head to toe, as if bringing everyone's attention to the bloody mess of Daniel's slaughter.
"What's happened, Daniel?"
he asked, his voice beginning to shake.
"Are you hurt?"
Daniel's fingers tightened on the hatchet's handle, and an icy sliver of terror ripped through Sam's body.
"Sebastian, stay back!"
"But Sam, look at him. Something's wrong."
Then to Daniel,
"Where are Moore and Wainwright? Have they been injured? Was it the house?"
Sebastian moved one step closer to Daniel, and then, just as Sam had done, his gaze moved down to the blood-stained hatchet.
"What is that?"
he asked, the truth dawning on him.
"Daniel, what have you done?"
"Sebastian, get away from him!" Sam cried out.
Taking in a deep breath, Daniel's eyes began to glisten with tears. He clenched his jaw, shaking his head slowly back and forth. He began to mutter something under his breath, a blubbering mess of words that were at first unrecognizable. Sam watched Daniel's lips as he recited the words over and over like a prayer.
"What is he saying?"
Daniel's voice began to rise, the words floating like a swarm of black gnats down the hall.
"I'm sorry," he said. "I'm sorry. I'm sorry."
His eyes darted between the frail form of Sebastian and the dust-streaked face of Sam.
"I have to."
A horrible realization dawned on Sam.
"He's going to kill us. He's killed the others, and now he's come for us."
Sebastian must have come to the same conclusion. He took a step backward. Daniel's entire body flinched. He tightened his grip on the hatchet.
"I hid the book,"
Sebastian called back over his shoulder.
"Before I went to see Adodel, I hid it so no one could find it. You don't have to worry. No one will ever read it."
Sam watched as Sebastian's posture stiffened. He stood up straight, tall and proud, his hands clenched into fists. In that awful moment, he realized what the old man planned to do.
"I won't be its storyteller, Sam," he said. "Is the hole big enough yet? Can you get through the wall?"
"Don't, Sebastian."
"Is the hole big enough? Look, goddammit!"
Sam glanced over at the wall. He had hoped to make the hole bigger before crawling into the room, but maybe he could squeeze through.
Maybe.
"Is it?"
Sebastian yelled.
"Yeah, I think." "Then go."
"No, Sebastian. Go, Sam."
A roar filled the hallway, a sound of such pristine ferocity that for a brief moment, Sam thought an animal was preparing to charge them. It was. An animal that had once been Daniel Slaughter. A blood-soaked beast with murder in its eyes. The roar twisted back into Daniel's open maw like a cyclone spinning into the sky. It became a terrible, high-pitched moan, shrill and helpless.
"You understand? I have to! I have to do it!"
"Go!" Sebastian cried. "Now!"
The heavy footfalls came quickly, rattling the floor with each step. Daniel bounded down the hallway toward Sebastian, one hand stretched out to grab the old man, the other slicing the air with that death-caked hatchet. Even beneath the smudges of blood, his face burned bright red. He huffed and puffed like a locomotive as he charged, his loose clothes rippling around his body. Tears streamed down his flushed cheeks, that high-pitched moan like a boiling tea kettle.
"Sebastian!"
Sam screamed. The old man glanced back over his shoulder, and he smiled. Daniel's bloody fingers grasped at his prey. His hand came down on Sebastian's shoulder with such force that Sam was positive the old man would shatter beneath it, disintegrating into a cloud of dust and bone. The hatchet followed, swung at an angle. Its blade sank deeply into Sebastian's side. Ribs split like twigs. The old man groaned in agony as he threw all of his weight forward, pushing Daniel forward and toppling them both to the ground.
"I'm sorry!"
Daniel shrieked, swinging the hatchet wildly as he shoved Sebastian's frail body off of him. Daniel scrambled to his feet. He raised the hatchet to bring it down on the old man's skull. Sam did the only thing he could. He clapped his hands loudly and cried, "Hey! Over here!" It was ridiculous, he knew. It was the way one might get the attention of a disobedient dog. But it worked. Daniel's head whipped toward Sam, his face wrinkled into a hideous sneer. For the first time since this standoff had begun, how long had it been? Seconds? Minutes? Hours? Sam got a good look at Daniel's eyes. Something had gotten inside him, infected him, forcing him to complete his unthinkable deeds. Infected, Sam thought. The word was right. Daniel looked as if he were at the mercy of some unimaginably high fever, the rising temperature of his overworked body boiling away all coherent thought. He was mad.
"I have to,"
he said, his voice now low and guttural like a death rattle.
"That's right," Sam said. "So do it. I'm right here. Come and get me."
There was no time to be afraid. Daniel's feet pounded into the wooden floor as he resumed his charge, and Sam spun quickly around, arms reaching for the sides of the narrow passage, the very tips of his toes grazing each step as he flew up the stairs. He could hear Daniel coming after him. Each stair he mounted groaned in agony. He could hear the excited pant of Daniel's breath as he scrambled up the staircase, so close Sam could almost sense the heat on his back. But all the while, Sam kept his eyes on one thing, the hole in the brick wall, just wide enough for him to slip through. Just small enough to keep Daniel out. The thick edge of Daniel's middle finger slid down Sam's back and Sam dove, the voice of his father suddenly shouting in his ear, a command from his years playing Little League baseball back in Kansas.
"Slide! Slide!"
Sam slid, the sharp corners of the bricks cutting into his stomach as he passed through the black mouth he had cut into the wall. He was swallowed by the darkness. Sebastian listened as Daniel's thundering footsteps moved quickly down the hall, away from him. His side was on fire. Even the slightest movement sent needles shooting through his entire body. But he had to move. He had to move quickly before Daniel returned. Gritting his teeth to hold in a scream, Sebastian dragged himself across the floor, toward the door of the closest bedroom. His bedroom. He reached for the doorknob, but his fingers only grazed it. His fingertips left streaks of blood on the brass knob. His entire hand was covered in the red stuff. He shivered as shock threatened to overtake him. He had to stay present. He had to be in this moment, or it would surely be his last. Clenching his teeth, he forced his body to rise up. Something snapped in his chest. Another rib, fractured by the blow. Something pushed through his skin, the jagged edge of a bone, and he felt a gush of fresh blood course down his side. Daniel's muffled voice snapped him to attention, echoing down from another world.
"Get back here! Let me do this! I have
to do this!
He was still after Sam, although the frustration in his voice made Sebastian think that perhaps Sam was temporarily out of reach. He hoped so. Sebastian's fingers took hold of the doorknob. He fought against the slickness of the blood as he turned it. The door gave a merciful click, and Sebastian pushed it open. Digging an elbow into the wood floor, he dragged himself inside the bedroom. He scooted up against the wall and quietly pushed the door shut. The latch clicked back into place. For the moment, he was safe. For the moment, he was alive.
But I shouldn't be,
he thought.
I shouldn't live through this.
35. 5:02 p.m. Even as Sam hit the floor, he never stopped moving. He scooted with his feet, pushing himself farther into the room, his body cleaning a path through the thick layer of dust as Daniel swiped the hatchet through the hole in the wall. The first thing Sam noticed was the cold. The third floor bedroom had to be at least 40 degrees cooler than the rest of the house. When he exhaled, his breath misted into an icy cloud. The room was nothing more than a large empty square. Thick dust covered the wooden floor. On the far side was a pile of toppled brick, and beyond this, the elevator car, its accordion door open. Once he was halfway across the bedroom, Sam allowed himself to stop. Daniel was still much too large to climb through the hole in the wall, but that didn't stop him from trying. He pressed his body up against the bricks as if expecting his form to mold to the shape of the opening, like a child trying to force the wrong puzzle piece into place.
"Get back here!"
he yelled.
"Just let me do it! Let me finish this!"
Sam propped himself up with his arms, his chest heaving as he attempted to catch his breath.
"Daniel, stop! Please! Think about what you're doing!"
Daniel let out a furious howl, a sound that made Sam think of an animal caught in a steel trap.
"It's not too late to stop," Sam told him. "We can walk away from here. We can fix things." "Shut up!"
Daniel yelled. His voice bounced around the room like an echo chamber, ping-ponging from wall to wall.
"You don't understand."
"I want to understand, Daniel."
"You can't!"
Only half of his face was visible through the hole, but Sam could see fresh tears glistening on his beet-red cheeks. He watched as Daniel glanced to the right, focusing on something just over Sam's shoulder. There was nothing there, of course, only the empty wheelchair, the broken spokes of its bent wheels draped in an elaborate spiderweb.
"I don't know if I can,"
Daniel said. Saliva bubbles popped between his lips as he cried.
"Daniel, who are you talking to?" Sam asked.
Daniel stared at the wheelchair. He saw something sitting there, something that offered him much-needed words of support. His face darkened. The tears stopped flowing. He began to nod, understanding. Then his insane glare was on Sam again. The tiny glimpse of old, reasonable Daniel gone in an instant, pulled under by the current of dark waters.
"Okay," he whispered. "Okay. I can do it. For you."
Sam gave a startled yelp as Daniel began to ram the wall.
Thud! Thud!
The force with which Daniel slammed his shoulder into the bricks made Sam cringe. The barrier would hold, he was sure of it. He was safe for the time being, unless there was another way in.
"The elevator,"
Sam thought suddenly, a jolt of panic ripping through his body. He hopped up and raced across the room, leaping over the pile of bricks and into the elevator car. He jammed a finger into the button for the first floor. Nothing happened. The elevator did not move. Sam gave a frustrated cry. He hopped up and down in the car, but it stayed put.
"I'm going to die in here."
No sooner had Sam thought these words than he became aware of the faint sound of something scattering on the wooden floor. Daniel was still smashing into the wall like a wrecking ball, his teeth bared, a long string of spit dripping from the corner of his mouth. Yet where before the wall showed no signs of giving, it now buckled inward a bit, the mortar between each brick crumbling to the ground. Daniel must have sensed it, for his attack increased in both frequency and power. He began to hum excitedly under his breath. It was difficult to accept. Sam had hammered away at that wall for hours and only managed to loosen a handful of bricks, and it was about to cave against Daniel's immense weight. There was only one other way out, the small window that graced the north wall. Unfortunately, it had been boarded up years ago. Several thick planks were secured to the wall on either side of the frame. An obscene number of nails held them in place. Many of the heads were bent at odd angles, as if whoever hammered them in did so in a rush.
It's a prison, he realized. Those boards were there to keep someone in. To keep Rebecca in.
Sam's hand gripped something. A handle. He looked down. He was still holding the small hammer. He had forgotten it was even in his hand. Sam rushed to the window and began bashing at the boards. They did not budge. Like the brick wall, they refused to give, even though they were already covered in countless dents from a previous attack.
She tried to get out of this room.
The thought sent a chill through his body.
Come on!
He cried. He hammered at the flat ends of the boards. The head of the hammer savaged them, splitting off slivers of wood, but the boards held tight. Behind him came the thunk of a brick dropping to the floor. Seconds later, it was followed by another.
He's coming! Sam's mind screamed. He's going to get you! He's going to kill you! Just like Moore! Just like Wainwright! Just like...
Sebastian. Poor Sebastian. He saw the old man smiling back at him as Daniel raised the hatchet high into the air. With a mighty cry, Sam swung the hammer into the end of the middle board. It moved. One of the rusty nails gave an angry howl as it was wrenched from the wall. It was enough for him to slip his fingers in between the board and the wall. He gripped the end, put one foot on the wall, and pulled back with all of his strength. Like the first brick in the wall, the board seemed to pull back, to fight against him. But Sam would not yield. Veins bulged in his arms, raising the damaged flesh beneath his tattoos as he forced the board free. The nails shrieked, and then Sam was falling backward, the board in his hand. He threw it aside. Dim light passed through the sliver of grimy window. Sam was immediately back to work, bashing the next board free. One by one they fell until the tiny window was completely exposed. He clawed desperately at its latch with sweat-drenched hands. The mad humming from Daniel was rising in volume as he pounded faster and faster at the wall. It was disturbingly sexual, as if the excitement of bursting through the obstruction was bringing him to climax. Sam's fingers slipped from the latch. He swung the hammer down on it, but the latch would not move.
Come on, come on! Open, you son of a bitch!
The head of the hammer slipped, and his hand grazed the latch, tearing the tender flesh of his palm. Streaks of fresh blood glistened on the tarnished metal. It was no use. The latch stuck tight. He let out a whimper, a noise that both infuriated and frightened him in its helplessness. A third brick fell, and Sam knew there was no time left. In only a few seconds, the wall would topple and Daniel would rush him, hatchet slicing the air. Sam swung the hammer again, but this time he aimed for the window pane. It broke through with an ease that thrilled him. Shards of glass showered the floor like hail. He ran the head of the hammer around the edge of the frame, chipping away the remaining shards. From across the room, he heard the thunderous rumble of the wall coming down. A brick, propelled by Daniel's powerful attack, came skidding across the floor, stopping a few inches from Sam's foot. Sam dashed back across the room. The intricate network of spider webs ripped like silk tendons as he grabbed the wheelchair by the armrests and lifted it from the floor. He paused, noticing the savagely bent wheels. The chair had once been used as a weapon, or a tool. He remembered the dents in the wood planks hiding the window. He looked quickly around and saw similar dents in each wall. Even the ceiling looked as if someone had tried to claw their way through it.
She was locked in here. Rebecca Finch was locked in this room. To die.
He considered the wheelchair clutched in his hands, and a sudden thought occurred to him.
Scratches on the ceiling, smashing the chair into the window. Rebecca could not have done this. Who was locked in here?
Daniel bounded into the room. Sam had no time to plan the action. In one fluid motion, he hoisted the heavy metal chair in an arc over his head, his eyes never leaving the intended target. It was a direct hit. The edge of one wheel collided with Daniel's chest and sent the large man falling back through the now open doorway. He thudded back onto the steep staircase behind him. Racing to the window, Sam mashed his hands down onto the exposed frame. He could feel the shards he had missed biting into his flesh like glass teeth, but he ignored the pain, propping himself up through the hole where the window once was. Rain pelted his face as he maneuvered his body through the tight space, only vaguely aware that he was now dangling over three stories of open air. The roof of the front porch was directly below him, and the hideously twisted beech tree just past this.
I can't let you go!
Daniel's voice boomed as if his mouth were inches from Sam's ear.
I have to do this, you understand? For her!
Move it, asshole! Sam's mind ordered. Faster, faster!
Sam did as he was told, swiveling around onto his butt and taking hold of the edge of the rooftop. He kicked wildly with his feet as he pulled himself up and out of the window. Once, his shoes made contact with what felt like Daniel's shoulder, and a wave of terror shook Sam's entire body. But he did not stop. The muscles in his forearms burned white hot as he lifted himself away from the windowless frame and up toward the roof. The heavy rain made getting a grip difficult, but somehow he managed. He had no choice. It was either keep hold or fall to his death. He flopped onto the roof's sandpaper-rough shingles like a landed fish. His arms were trembling as he strained to drag himself farther onto the roof. Something grazed his leg, and a gush of warmth ran down his ankle.
He's cut me! He's cut me with that fucking hatchet!
A fresh hit of adrenaline screamed through him, and growling through clenched teeth, Sam dug his fingernails into the shingles, dragging himself those last few feet onto the roof. He was instantly on his back, pushing himself farther and farther up the steep incline. He blinked in the rain, the water coursing down his neck and under his shirt like hundreds of clear, wet snakes. He lay there, letting the storm drench him, trying in vain to steady his breath. He glanced down. A bloody gash peeked out through the cut in his pant leg. He parted the material to inspect the wound. He could see the inside of his flesh, like a cross-section of sedimentary rock. Sam closed his eyes and a few hot tears slipped free. They streaked down his trembling cheeks and were instantly washed away by the unrelenting storm. From the bedroom below, Daniel swiped the hatchet out into the air. Even with the weight he had lost in the past 6 months, he was still too large to fit through the window. He let out a furious roar. The entire house seemed to shudder beneath Sam. And then it answered its new caretaker, those hundreds of phantom voices whispering, the sound emanating from every board, every nail, every stone. Sam began to scale the sharp incline of the roof, his back hunched, his fingers gripping the abrasive surface of the shingles. When he neared the peak, he leaned on the brick chimney for support. Had the house been smaller and the roof steeper, the unrelenting rain may have sent him sliding right over the edge, a fall that would have left him with a broken back at best. But the immense size of the structure meant that the roof rose at no more than a 45-degree angle. He had to concentrate on keeping a foothold, but at last he made it to the top. Sam straddled the peak of the roof. He was higher than the treetops, with a clear view for half a mile in each direction. The bulk of the trees seemed to trace the winding creek, cloaking it in a dense green garment. He followed it around the side of the house to the front yard. Around the bridge they had crossed when they arrived, the trees shrank back, exposing the creek bed. Except it was no longer a bed. The afternoon storm had managed to dump enough water onto the dry earth to get a stream flowing. It seemed unlikely that the creek could be rejuvenated in just a few hours, but there it was, a growing deluge rippling through the countryside like blood down a wound whose scab had been peeled free. At this